All right. In keeping with this theme of consumer image around health and disease, why don't we introduce today's guest who's taken an interesting position on one of the most visible public health campaigns of all time. Dr. Gail Sulick is author of Pink Ribbon Blues, How Breast Cancer Culture Undermines Women's Health. Dr. Sulick is a medical sociologist and a 2008 fellow of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Dr. Sulick, welcome to Second Opinion Live.
Hello.
Hi there. All right. Can you start off by giving us a little background about the history of this pink ribbon movement and how it's gotten where it is today? I see pink ribbons everywhere.
They are everywhere, and they're everywhere every month of the year, not just October at this point. It's been around since 1992 when the pink ribbon was born. But the whole advocacy movement that started this whole shift toward awareness and visibility was really started in the 1970s and 1980s. And that was really an effort to bring women's health forward as a public issue and an effort to destigmatize the disease itself. Cancer was hidden, not only breast cancer, but cancer in general was very hidden. Don't talk about it. Be afraid of it. It's a death sentence. And so part of the awareness shift was to kind of move breast cancer out of the closet into the light, shine a light on it, and enable people to think about it, talk about it, find support, get information. And from there, it kind of snowballed, a giant pink snowball at this point, into something very different.
Right. I remember my parents and my in-laws, they wouldn't even use the word. It was the big C. We never talked about it. I remember relatives dying from cancer, and we never talked about it. So it seems your perspective is that breast cancer is being used in this campaign as a sort of marketing tool. Can you talk about that? Is that an accurate way to frame it?
It is accurate. You know, the ribbon, when it first had come onto the scene, was oriented to be a symbol like any other symbol, and it was building on the successes of the red ribbon for AIDS awareness, which was very successful. But the difference with the pink ribbon is that it actually was born in a boardroom, and so it came out of a campaign from Self magazine and also work with Estee Lauder, Evelyn Lauder of Estee Lauder, and the goal was to get awareness out via cosmetics counters throughout the nation. And that's what happened, and so the ribbon became pink. It became very feminized, representing all that is good about women and femininity and sugar, spice, and all things nice. And that was also a move to help to destigmatize it, because everything around cancer is really negative and bad, so let's put a pink ribbon on it and boost it up a little bit, make it a little more lighthearted. From there, there was a lot of goods and things that then became attached to it.
So you talked about the pink snowball. You said this thing snowballed out of control. At what point do you think there was that tipping point in which things got out of hand or the aim changed? Or from our perspective, I mean, some would ask the question, do the ends justify the means overall? I mean, you seem to be pointing the finger at saying, no, they don't. I mean, I'd like to hear your perspective on that.
Sure. Well, I think there was a really big shift. We could see, and you could probably even see as well, that in the last 3 to 5 years, there are many, many more pink ribbons out than there were before that. So there was a shift around early 2000s as corporate cause marketing had already taken hold, but it started to really take hold for breast cancer. Corporate partnerships were growing exponentially, and it's just continued to grow over the years. And one of the figures that I've heard quite a bit, and I still haven't been able to track down everything that makes up this number, but the number is that $6 billion a year is raised in the name of breast cancer. And that doesn't mean that money goes to breast cancer, but things are sold in the name of it, in the name of the cause. And so when you think about, okay, what might the consequences of this be, they're actually a lot, some positive, more negative, I think, and that's why I question it. And you're probably going to say, okay, what are those negative consequences?
Right, you are.
Yeah.
Saved us the time of asking. Go right ahead.
And so, you know, you can start to think about the negative consequences if you can remind yourself of what are the things that you see out in the culture with a ribbon on it. Are you familiar with the Kentucky Fried Chicken pink buckets?
We are familiar with that. Michael more than so than myself.
Oh, be quiet. I do not eat them.
Well, there was a big uproar around this particular campaign because it was selling fast food for the cure. There are alcohol that you can buy for the cure. I just saw an ad last week for a pub crawl for the cure. So there's an idea here that we're selling things that actually contribute to the cancer burden or that are risk factors, but we're doing it in the name of the cure of breast cancer. I also see a lot of misinformation that is connected with ads and promotional materials, survival statistics that are incorrect or that are embellished to focus on either stage zero breast cancer or very early breast cancer, suggesting that this is the survival for everyone. I saw an ad last year for mammography, and the headline said, everybody's doing it, shouldn't you? And so just in the time where the protocols were shifting, you don't necessarily need your mammogram every year at 40, shift to every other year at 50. Instead of getting that information out to the public, why is this shift happening? It's just do it because everybody else is. So you see lots of stuff going alongside these campaigns that are providing health information that are not accurate at all or not contextualized so that they make sense to people.
So the pink ribbon around the bottle of wine is really kind of like killing for peace, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to ReachMD XM160, the channel for medical professionals. I'm Dr. Michael Greenberg, alongside the wonderful Dr. Matt Bernholtz. And we're talking to Dr. Gail Sulick, author of the book Pink Ribbon Blues, How Breast Cancer Culture Undermines Women's Health. Back to the questions, Matt.
One question that comes to me here is that we still haven't fully addressed, the million-dollar question, do the ends justify the means? Because money, as you mentioned, doesn't entirely go towards what people would initially think it goes to, which is greater awareness, more research for cures. You're saying the money doesn't necessarily get allocated to that, even through these foundations that are, I guess, hypocritical in nature, Kentucky Fried Chicken, for instance, and these others that are doing these fundraising things. Some would look on that and say that still the ends justify the means, though, because good is coming out of that. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, I guess I would ask, what is the good? What is the good?
You got us there.
Well, the question being, is money actually being allocated towards services that could help people, whether they're support groups, support services, cure research, medical services? I mean, where is this money going? If you're saying that it doesn't all go towards these services, where does it go?
Yeah. Well, it goes to a lot of different things. Some of it doesn't even make it to any organizations at all. So the pub crawl last week didn't have any indication that any of the money being made in the name of the cause was actually going toward the cause in any way at all. So you have those that exist, that you just put a pink ribbon on it, say it's for the cure, for the fight, for some ambiguous category of awareness or research, and it really doesn't go anywhere at all. So you have lots of examples like that. But then you have specific examples. You may be familiar with the very famous I Heart Boobies bracelets.
Again, Michael's far more familiar with that than I am.
No clue. I have no clue what these are.
Okay, so there are lots of campaigns, Save the Tatas, Don't Let Cancer Steal Second Base, I Love Boobies is the new rage, especially in middle schools and high schools. And none of this money for these foundations actually go to research. They go into a category called education. They are very often linked to breast self-exam and promote the idea that BSE is the way to stave off or find breast cancer early. And yet the National Cancer Institute doesn't even recommend BSE anymore. And in trials, BSE has not been found to find cancers early or to reduce mortality. So I would say it's a harm to put out information that BSE is, BSE is a way to educate people about breast cancer when it's not recommended by these bodies who do the research to find out whether it is or not. So that's one kind of thing that's happening that's called education that I would argue is not exactly education. Then you have the research question, right? The largest breast cancer organization in the world only spends 21% of its program on research. Only 2% of research overall goes toward metastatic disease, which is what is most responsible for the 40,000 deaths that we continue to have every year. So we may need to just shift. If all of this money is available, if we shift it around, we might actually do a better job and produce more good.
What kind of alternatives would you suggest? What are some more helpful support channels for breast cancer patients? If this kind of campaign is ultimately negative from your perspective, what would you think would be a positive step?
Yeah, well, I think they're not all negative. I think, there's no need to throw out the baby with the bathwater, that there is a lot of awareness that has happened. But studies have come out to show that the awareness effort has done its job. And people know about breast cancer now. They know about screening, though they don't necessarily know the caveats of false positives, false negatives. But it's done its work, and now there is an opportunity to shift and recalibrate the direction of the movement to focus on things that are very evidence-based and to focus on coordinating research so that the possibility of eradication is really there. The National Breast Cancer Coalition is an organization strongly supporting that. That organization made an unprecedented statement last year where the president actually had stated that she had given up on hope and that we didn't need any more awareness. And the reason for that was that we needed concerted effort and action. And I think that's really where the movement is today, that's the shift that it needs.
Okay. One more quick last question. Looking at the campaign, the public characterization of breast cancer distorts people's ideas about what it's like to be a cancer patient. And we always see these cancer women like, yes, we're great and we look healthy and we have all our hair.
Can-do attitude.
Can-do. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, it works for some people. Some people really do feel that way. So for them, it works really well. There are other people who don't necessarily feel that way. There are many distressing emotions and negative outcomes and fears about death that don't make their way into the festive, cheerful public discourse. And so by focusing on the festivity and the triumphant aspects of survivorship, sometimes we forget that that's not the experience of everyone and that people are still dealing with recurrences. About a third of people who are diagnosed with invasive breast cancer will have a recurrence. When recurrence happens, the survival statistics go way down, considerably farther down. And so those realities are very important to acknowledge.
And you feel that upbeat attitude sets up patients to fail in some regard or feel like they're not matching the status quo of what they see on TV?
They're not good enough. They're not succeeding.
Yeah, you're not good. You're not a good enough survivor. And so we've almost, in a sense, replaced one form of stigma with another one. Before, you were stigmatized if you even had cancer, but now you're stigmatized if you're not the upbeat, triumphant cancer survivor. And so it can be very isolating for some people.
Yeah, you only got a C in cancer. You weren't good enough.
That's sobering to think about, but it is an interesting perspective you add. I'm not sure all our listeners would agree wholeheartedly. I think some still side with that mentality of, hey, you know, the ends still justify the means. At least the awareness is good. Optimism is good from our perspective as providers. We always want our patients to be upbeat if they can, even if they meet a very difficult experience. But I agree, there's a lot of value in your sentiment
right here. And I'm not eating fried chicken to cure cancer. No, thank you.
No, but you're so right, though. I mean, hope from an individual perspective. We all need it. You know, what makes you get up out of bed in the morning for anybody?
The thought of doing a show with Matt, that's what gets me out of bed in the morning.
I can imagine that would be a good incentive. But it is. It's crucial. It's crucial. And so to try to think about how to really support people in their version of hope, what they find hopeful and uplifting, could make the umbrella a little bit bigger for awareness and for support of breast cancer.
That's a perfect send-off statement. Our guest today has been Dr. Gail Sulick, author of Pink Ribbon Blues, How Breast Cancer Culture Undermines Women's Health. Dr. Sulick, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much.